to this interview with Eyes on Investors, and my guest today is Leif Dyke, and I'm excited to talk to you, Leif, because I know you've got a lot of real estate investing experience on your own, and you also own a mortgage company, and you help people get financing for their mortgages. So we'll be talking about both of those things today, and I think people are going to be looking forward to what you have to say. So let's start. I'd like to start by asking you, how many properties have you owned or do you own? Just kind of give us a feel for what your experience is with real estate investing.
Sure, great. Well, really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and your guest. I've been in the mortgage banking business for about 15 years, and in connection with being in this business, I get an opportunity to look at a lot of financial statements, tax returns, and hear and see a lot of customers' financial investment strategy and how they're investing, using their liquidity to create wealth and cash flow and all the things that we're really after in regards to, you know, building a retirement nest egg. One of the things I noticed from that, when I was young in my career, was that the clients that were investing in real estate really had a nice, number one, a nice tax shelter that was built in, and it was basically a product of that investment strategy and investing in real estate. And as I was working in this industry as a loan officer and building my income level, noticed I also had that desire to try to shelter some of the income. I noticed I was paying a lot of, you know, income taxes, and I was looking for ways to use my income and my savings to build net worth, to build net cash flow, and at the same time shelter myself from some tax burden. And real estate seemed like a great fit for that. So I started by dipping my toe in single family investment. I think my first purchase was in 1996, and
you've been doing it a long time.
Yeah, I've been doing it a long time. Initially, what I came across in 96 was I came across one seller that had four properties in the Spring Branch area. They're four single family homes, and the seller was living outside of the city and was an older gentleman, and was just, you know, the tenants weren't paying him, and he was having trouble managing them and managing the properties, and he also had some tax, he wasn't paying his property taxes, so he had some tax burden. And we made an agreement for me to buy those properties from him. I actually ended up buying three of the four properties. And that kind of started.
Were you a loan officer at the time, and that's how you found out about him?
Yes.
Did I understand that right?
Yes, I was a loan officer at the time, and I had a referral from a realtor, a gentleman that was looking to sell the properties. Just started talking to him. The properties weren't listed at the time. They weren't being marketed actively. It was just one of those opportunistic events that came across that ended up being a good opportunity for me to get into real estate.
So you were kind of in the mindset of, I'd like to get into real estate because it'll provide a good tax shelter. And so when this opportunity came up, you recognized it for what it was.
Yes, I felt like the area that the properties were in were, you know, had some good opportunity for appreciation, and they were, you know, inexpensive, and I felt like I could really go in and actively manage the properties and lease them at a more consistent level, more efficient level, and over time get that appreciation in the property, get the cash flow, and then hopefully start building a portfolio, which is exactly what
right.
I did.
So you bought three of those properties, and how did that work out?
It worked out really good. They were in disrepair, and they were really, you know, the tenants that were there really weren't paying. So we had to, you know, evict the tenants, and I think we ended up evicting all three tenants. And I actually had a partner on the transaction. It was my brother. He and I went in together on it. I was kind of the active person managing the property and managing the renovation and being more, you know, the leasing and so forth. So I was more of the working partner, if you will. We renovated the properties and got them leased up, and, you know, eventually ended up selling those properties after holding them for several years, and it worked out to be a real nice return.
Mm-hmm. So did you have cash flow while you owned them and they were paying their rents, and then you also made a capital gain when you sold them?
Yes, what I did was we, you know, we had we our basis was very low in those properties, and we ended up going in and doing all the renovation with cash. And when we got the properties renovated and leased, and we're holding on to them for, you know, 6 to 12 months, we went back and we had debt on the properties we used to buy the properties, but we actually went back and refinanced those properties and pulled cash out to build cash cash position so we could go out and buy more properties. And yeah, during that time, I mean, we leased them out for positive cash flow during the whole period, and then building equity over time just by, you know, again, adding improvements, improving the properties, improving the cash flow, improving the efficiency of the management of the properties. And over time, that built the equity that we needed to when we eventually sold.
That makes sense. So I want you, I'm going to get into refinancing properties a little bit later, but you mentioned that when you first bought these three properties, you had to evict the tenants. So I know some people will be interested in that process because one of the fears that people who are getting into real estate investing have is that, you know, well, what if I have to evict the tenants? So what's the what was the process that you used to do that?
Well, you know, I'm real big on my part of my strategy is recognizing weaknesses and bringing in professionals that can help guide you through that process, and that's one of the things that I've always bought into. And so I used, you know, from all my leasing, I used a leasing agent, a realtor that basically did all the leasing that was, you know, very experienced in leasing single family and you know, apartments and so forth. And so they he brought a lot to the table and was able to educate me on that process. And in essence, you know, we it was wasn't very difficult, and my experience overall, and I've very rarely had to evict a tenant over the last 15 years as I've been investing in owning real estate and all income producing properties. I've very rarely did I have to actually ever go to court and try to evict someone, but because ultimately what ends up happening is, you know, they get the notices, the customer gets, you know, the procedure is you have to provide proper notice, and that's either you delivering that notice of eviction notice or going through a constable to deliver it for you. I like the latter. You can hire a constable for $10 to go out and actually deliver the notice that's required, and that really sends a strong message to the tenant because you have a big constable show up, knock on your door with an eviction notice. And it really, you know, sends them the message that, you know, this is serious and that we're taking it to the next level. And ultimately, that tip that generally will, you know, get people to move out or pay their
Or
rent that's
get
due.
current.
Yes, either one. And in most cases, it's, you know, they're catching up. But I mean, that's at least been my experience. But eventually, you know, every once in a while, you have a tenant that, you know, just can't make it for whatever reason. They're having tough times, and just a matter of getting them out so you can move on to the next tenant. Beyond that, I mean, if that doesn't work and they don't move out, you have to file with the justice of the peace in the jurisdiction where your property is, and then ultimately take them to court, and then the judge will hopefully rule in your favor and request the eviction, and then it's forcible eviction at some point down the line where you'd actually go in and change the locks and through the court system and move them out of the property. You know, in my 15 years of owning rental property, I've never had to go that far. So I've been lucky that I've never had to actually take someone and forcibly remove them from the property. I think that you know, as long as you're following the guidelines and sending the right letters and notices and kind of using the tools at your fingertips, that typically will, you know, at least my experience has always been that the tenant gets the message and eventually will move on.
Yeah, and most of the investors that I talk to, that's been their same experience where they have, you know, given an eviction notice, that usually solves the problem before it has to go any further than that. In fact, I don't think I've talked to anyone that's gone entirely through the court system. So for people that are worried about that, you don't need to worry too much about it. Probably not going to happen. But, you know, the first eviction notice and will work. And actually, tell me if you agree with this. Most of the tenants, if you screen them properly, you'll never even have to deal with that in the first place to
Yes.
give them an eviction notice.
Exactly. Yeah. If you do a good job on the screening, and what we do is credit and criminal background checks on every tenant that applies, and then we're, you know, I'm analyzing it from a lot of different angles, you know, credit, capacity, their ability to make the rent payments. I'm looking at their
They make enough money to pay the rent.
Exactly. They make enough money. What are their other bills like? Do they have a lot of credit card debt? What other obligations do they have? What extra money do they have that they have available just in case times get tough? I mean, so I analyze it almost like I analyze a client applying for a loan. And it's almost because, in essence, the customer is applying for credit with you as a landlord. And you're extending that credit based on their credibility, their capacity, willingness to repay, and so forth. So
right.
It's important that you're doing that screening. And if you're, you know, if you run, you know, if you're careful and screen carefully, and then again, and then and beyond that, I mean, that's not to say that we don't, you know, take someone with credit issues, because we certainly will do that. But if we do that, we'll protect ourselves by requiring, you know, a higher security deposit. So in the event that they do default, we've got that additional funds in our account to protect us from that vacancy and the cost of repair and so forth. In fact, today I was, or actually yesterday, I was notified on a tenant, one of my apartment complexes, that you know, he had bad credit. He's only been there since November. It's a $750 a month apartment that he's renting from us. And yesterday I found out that he bolted. You know, he vacated the unit. He didn't pay his rent.
He just took off.
He just took off. He didn't pay his rent for February, and
right.
You know, we have a unit that's vacant. And thankfully, I mean, you know, he did have rough credit, but he had a good job. And actually, we went beyond his job to call his employer and verify employment and talk to the employer to see, you know, what kind of an employee he was, and got a very good reference from that end. At the end of the day, even though with those good references and the income to qualify, we still asked for a month and a half security deposit, which is more than what we normally would ask for. And so we covered ourselves from a security deposit standpoint. So in the event that this happened, we've got that extra cushion to be able to go in, cover ourselves from a make ready and from a vacancy standpoint.
Yeah, that's perfect, because if he paid a month and a half deposit and it takes you maybe a week or less perhaps to turn it around, it's sitting vacant for a very short period of time. The deposit's covered that, the deposit's taken care of, cleaning it, whatever else needs to be done, and your cash flow just continues on as if nothing had happened.
Yes, exactly. In some cases, that can be a windfall. I mean, if we're, you know, if you handle it, if you manage it properly, you can actually, you know, end up, you know, I think last year when on my portfolio of properties, you know, I started with a small, you know, and I kind of like that. My approach has always been, you know, when I talk to customers, you know, go in and start, you know, go buy a single family home and, you know, get your program in place. I think I'm a real big believer in, you know, building a foundation that you can grow on. And part of that foundation is, you know, getting one rental property or two that you can start building your rental program on. And when I say that, you know, having the right professionals in place that are, they're going to help you be successful in that endeavor. And that could be leasing agents. It could be, you know, plumbers, electricians, AC, make-ready contractors, legal attorneys, CPAs that can give you advice that you need to build that portfolio and manage it properly. So, you know, getting one or two in the beginning really helps you kind of get your program in place, and then you're able to get more confidence in your program, make sure you're dealing with the right people that are taking care of you, that are fair, that show up when you call them, that give you a fair price. And all those things are kind of the foundation you need to be able to take that next step to grow your portfolio to a larger portfolio, where it ultimately ends up being not just a, you know, a side investment, which is where I started, but grow it into more of a business, which is where I'm at today, and where I have an employee, you know, a full-time employee that works for me, that manages all my properties that I manage, and it's a big portfolio of properties that I, you know, that's really building, you know, my retirement for me.
Oh, that's great. So how many properties do you have or units? It sounds like you're in multifamily at this point.
Yes, I am. I own six apartment complexes, total of 100 units. And within that, I've got, they're all, you know, smaller properties, obviously, with a total units of 100. But, you know, my biggest property is 24 units, and the total units is 100 units. They're all apartment complexes. And I have one full-time employee that works for me. The company is Heights Capital, and that employee basically does is the property manager, manages the property, and also a maintenance manager, in that he actually performs a lot of the maintenance.
So he doubles as that.
Yeah, he doubles both. And actually, it was a great, you know, you have to build to that point where, I mean, I just added the, as I pulled in, when I went from, you know, 60 to like 70 units to 75 units is when I actually first hired a full-time property manager. I always had part-time property managers along the way that were helping me manage. But eventually, when you get to that, you know, economies of scale, you can, you know, afford to bring on full-time help and a full-time employee, which is what I did.
So do you find that as you've scaled up, you've got more and more units, now you're able to hire a full-time person to do these things, is your involvement actually less now than it was before? Like, does this take less work, or do you find it's about the same, or what happens with that?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot less work because, you know, I have someone in the streets, and eyes and ears in the street, so to speak, that is visiting the properties daily, walking the properties, inspecting, dealing with tenant issues. So it definitely takes a lot less of my time than it did in the beginning. I mean, in the beginning I was very active. In fact, I was doing some leasing, showing properties, meeting the contractors out there, making sure that things were done right, checking, inspecting the work. I mean, so it was a lot more involved. And at the same time, I had a full-time job, so I was trying to do it after work and on the weekends and maybe sometimes taking time out. And, you know, honestly, from a professional standpoint, my time from an hourly return basis is best spent, you know, in my finance business, which is my professional career. I'll get a higher return from on an hourly basis dealing with my mortgage banking operation than I do if I'm out and visiting a contractor. So from a return standpoint, you know, it's much better for me to have someone out there that's going to be able to take care of a lot of those things. And ultimately what I end up doing is managing the accounting side of it and managing the different professionals that I have that work for me in that regard.
I see. That makes sense. So something that people who are just starting out, the expectation really is they're probably going to have to be doing more work, but as they can grow their portfolio, they can spend less and less time on it. They're really just running a business, which they can hire other people to do. So you've got your retirement kind of over there, not taking a whole lot of your time to deal with that while you can run your lending business and you know, have your income from that. That's great.
Yeah.
So let's talk about – oh, yeah, go ahead.
I said, yeah, it works out real well. I mean, I'm more of a hands-on investor. So I am real big on, you know, when you start that building that foundation to build your portfolio, that you're involved pretty heavily in the beginning. So it's important that, you know, for me, from my perspective, it was important to me that I understand it all.
Exactly. And you get that understanding by doing it hands-on at the beginning.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So let's talk about your lending business. Your company is Texas Lone Star, and that's loan is in LOAN, right? Texas
Yes.
Lone Star. And I think your website I was looking at is texaslonestar.com, and you have you do both commercial loans and residential loans. So what I wanted to ask you is the following. I asked our Lifestyles Unlimited members last week what their biggest investing challenge is, and 60% of the people that responded said that getting financed was their biggest challenge. So I wanted to ask you, what can you – well, and let me also say that a lot of these people had fairly good credit, they had some money in the bank, and they were surprised to find out that they weren't able to get financing through the traditional ways of getting finance. So what can you say to people that are in that situation? I think a lot of people listening to this interview will be able to relate to that.
Well, what I would say is that, you know, that from our perspective on the residential financing side, we recognize as a company, and we deal, you know, as a company, we're dealing with investors on all different levels, whether they're buying a single family or they're buying a 200-unit apartment complex. We see kind of everything from the low end to the high end and everything in between. From a residential financing perspective, one of the things we recognize as a hurdle in this market, as we started seeing more foreclosures on the market and more opportunities for investors, is that the properties themselves weren't in a position where you could get normal, traditional, conventional financing. And there's some distinctions between a conventional, permanent mortgage and a more what we would consider a bridge or a renovation loan. On a conventional loan, which is more traditional, which is what most people will have a better understanding of because it's what they have on their primary residence and the loan, the regular 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. On a conventional loan basis, those loans are designed for properties that are currently livable, that are 100% complete, that are functional mechanically, structurally, and cosmetically in good condition. They don't have to be, the homes don't have to be perfect, but they have to be in a position where theoretically you, it's everything's in there that you need, or not theoretically, technically everything's in there that you need to actually clean the property up. And you could theoretically, you could send a maid in or a cleaning service, go clean the property, move a tenant in, and begin leasing it immediately. So it can't have any functional deficiencies such as missing appliances, missing flooring, you know, deferred maintenance issues that are, you know, beyond normal deferred maintenance. So, you know, holes in the walls or missing windows or roof issues. Those types of things are problematic from a conventional model because when the loan closes on a conventional loan, there's no guarantee and there's no money set aside and there's no really checks and balances that the buyer is going to go in and do any type of renovation at all. So they're loaning on that. We're loaning on that property on an as-is basis. And so we need to, from a lending standpoint, we have to have a collateral that's livable as is because we don't have any checks and balances to make sure they go out and do a renovation. The now, the great thing about conventional, well, that's the downside. The great thing about conventional loans is the rates are low, so it's going to help you cash flow the property. Down payments are reasonable. I mean, 20% down is minimum on an investment property. You know, the credit standards have gone up on investment property. You know, generally speaking, a 660 credit score would be the minimum entry to actually get in and buy on a conventional loan. And so, you know, you got to have a little bit more money in for the 20% and have, you know, credit needs to be, you know, what I would consider A- or above to qualify. And you have to be
able
to...
Is there a particular score that, that they're looking at for that?
I'd say the minimum, you know, for entry is 660.
Okay.
Now, that's definitely on the lower end of the scale. I mean, most people have a 720 credit score, I mean, which is what we consider A-plus credit. So a lot of people have that credit or can get there. I mean, if you've got a 660 credit score, you're, you know, or above, you're basically, you're making your payments on time, you're paying your bills, and ultimately, I mean, and you've got some credit depth, so those are the, you know, there's some credibility there in regards to the customer's willingness to repay. What, you know, from a foreclosure standpoint, the problem we saw in the market is being able to provide a financing facility that would allow the customer to buy a property that was in disrepair. And
because they couldn't get a conventional loan because the lender would look at it and say, well, this property, not that the buyer doesn't qualify, the property doesn't qualify because it has these issues.
Exactly. It's a collateral issue, not a financial profile issue on the borrower. And so what we came up with was, as a company, we came up with a couple of different programs that were designed for the investor looking to buy properties that needed renovation. And those are our renovation programs. And on those, renovation programs, they're great because they provide, you know, the acquisition funds for the purchase of the property. They provide the renovation funds that can be financed in the loan to renovate the property. And the leverage is oftentimes higher than what you would get on a conventional loan. So in our case, in most cases, borrowers are getting, you know, a minimum 90% of cost financing structure. So if they're buying a house, you know, the way that cost is determined is by looking at their purchase price, adding their renovation budget to that purchase price, and then loaning up to 90% of that number. So an example
Would that include closing costs as well?
No, it would not include closing costs.
Those would be outside of the 90%. Okay.
Outside of the 90%, yes. So in our case, an example would be, you know, you're buying a house for $60,000. It needs $8,000 renovation. That's $68,000 total cost to acquire the property. Then we're loaning 90% of that, which is $61,200. So the borrower has a 10% down payment, and you know, in essence, when they put that 10% down, they have no more money to put into it, in that, you know, other than the closing costs, as you mentioned. But they've got the purchase of the property closed, and they also have the renovation money built into the loan, so they can.
Right. Whereas with a conventional loan, they'd have to come up with all the cash for the down payment plus all the renovation costs, et cetera. So this allows them to get into to purchase the property with less cash out of pocket than a conventional.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So it gets them in with much less down, and it gives you all the ability to buy, renovate, and get the property into a position where you can actually lease it.
Then, are these long-term loans, or are these the type of loans where you would refinance it out?
Well, we have two programs internally that we offer. One of which is we call the Texas Two-Step, and it's a bridge loan. It's a 12-month interest-only loan. that will provide basically a, what we call a bridge, because it's a bridge between the acquisition and the permanent mortgage. With those with those customers, they're on that program, the idea is to provide the short-term facility to finance the purchase and renovation, with the exit strategy being we're going to take this loan out to a regular conventional 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. So you end up getting the best of both worlds. You get the higher leverage with the purchase renovation loan. You get all the renovation built into the financing on the first transaction, and at 90% and at a 90% level, which is above what you'd get on a conventional loan, and including your rehab budget, which is which you wouldn't be able to do on a conventional mortgage. Then the second step is the regular 30-year fixed rate mortgage, where we'd pay off the bridge loan and put the customer in a long-term 30-year fix. So you get all the benefit of the conventional mortgage, the low rate, the long-term fixed rate mortgage, and you get to basically leverage yourself higher by because you've done that bridge loan in the beginning. So it's a great program. You know, I think it's aggressive. It's provides the facility that the customer needs to really be successful, and we had a great success with that program.
Yeah, that sounds like it'll really help the people that responded to my question that were struggling with this, because the cost out of pocket is lower than what it would be with the conventional loan. You're making sure that you know they're qualified to do this. If it's the bridge, I guess, are you also looking to make sure that they'll be able to turn that into more, you know, the long-term loan after the bridge is the first part of the loan is complete?
Yes, yeah, and that's important that you brought that up, because from our perspective, the most important, you know, from my perspective and our company's perspective, the most important thing about a bridge loan or short-term loan, or a lot of people refer to them as a hard money loan, the most important aspect of that is not getting the loan closed on the acquisition or on the bridge, but what's the exit strategy? How do I get out of this mortgage? And because it's a short-term loan, you don't have, you know, there's not a lot of time for you to figure that out. So what we do to make the process transparent, we make sure our client qualifies for a permanent takeout, and we do that internally by underwriting that loan and looking at it from a conventional standpoint. Is okay, do they qualify for a conventional loan today? Can we pay this loan off when the house is renovated? And does the customer qualify? So it's very important that from a borrowing standpoint, from a consumer standpoint, that you go into that with the most important aspect of it being not how you get in it, but how do you get out of it.
I see. That makes sense. Does the house come into play? Does the property come into play at all? Like, you know, you're buying a property that may need some repairs and have some issues with it, but when you're looking at the refinance, you're dealing with a house that has a tenant, it's been fixed up, the value of the property is probably relatively higher than it was when it was initially purchased. So does that come into play?
Yeah, it definitely comes into play. You know, we're looking at the value of the property. We're making sure that there's enough equity there. So when we do, you know, number one, that we've got the equity that's upside for our customer based on the appraisal that's done. And there's definitely some incentive to stay and get that house renovated, and they're getting a fair market price. So we're doing an appraisal. We're also looking at the, you know, from a permanent loan, is there enough equity to satisfy on a conventional side for us to be able to refinance the property, and the borrower doesn't have to come up with additional money on the refinance. A lot of times what we'll see is that they'll go into a loan, and maybe that loan amount will be higher than what they would be able to get on a normal conventional loan. So they may have less money in on the bridge loan, but when they go to their permanent, that's when they have to put down the additional down payment. So, you know, whether you're putting it on the bridge side or whether you're putting it on the permanent side, it's all the same investment. What we like to do is make sure that, you know, we go into it, we've got, you know, all eyes, you know, we've got a transparent process, so the investor knows, you know, from a first mortgage on the bridge financing and on the conventional financing, what's the total all in, and we like to keep that at 10% or less. By running the traps we do, we're able to, you know, not guarantee that, but get it to a point where it's as close as possible to a precise projection based on both transactions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. So what I'm wondering then is we kind of wrap up, and I appreciate you taking a few extra minutes here than I said it would take. Is there anything else regarding financing or real estate investing that the people should know that we haven't covered that you'd like to share with them?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, number one, getting involved with a mortgage banker, I think, is and early on in the process is important, because you need to understand, you know, what's available, that you qualify, what to expect, and make sure you're talking to someone that knows the market, that knows, that has the product availability, and is an expert in that, so they can, because I mean, most people that go into a finance transaction, you know, they don't close on a home all the time, so they need to really spend some time to understand it, make sure that they're asking questions and getting the right answers. We're a mortgage banker, we're a direct lender, and so we have that ability that to fund and finance and service our mortgages.
That means you actually have the money that you're lending out to people. You're not going through a third party to get the money.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah, which gives us a lot of liberties. I mean, we're a Texas mortgage banker. We only lend in Texas. We control our appraisal process, and that we only have appraisers that are on our list or on our approved list because we place them there. So we've got some good certified, qualified appraisers that are out doing the work for us. So we're getting good values. We're getting, you know, fair values, and we're getting an experienced appraiser that knows the market, which is a lot different than some of our competition. And the big banks are primarily our competition, where they can't control that process, the appraisal process,
right?
Because they're too big to do it. And then the other flip side are the smaller brokers that can't control that process because they're prohibited by law to be able to ordering an appraisal. So there's some distinct advantages to being, you know, in our position. We see we have some distinct advantages that really pass through to our clientele and give them the ability to be more successful. I mean, it's for an example would be, we can pick the phone up and call our appraiser and get some feedback on valuations before any work's done, or before they actually go out and engage and charge us a fee for going out there. So we're, you know, we can get some information from, you know, some guidance, some comps and so forth that kind of give us a feel or some color on the neighborhood that the client's buying in, and we can use that to help our customer make their decision on moving forward.
Right. Well, that's great. And I like to tell people, too, because a lot of new investors look at the lender as kind of like the enemy in a way, like, okay, I have to work with them. But really, you should look at it like the lender is your friend. You know, if I went to go to you, Leith, to get a loan, you're looking out after your interests, but really those interests are my interests. Because if you're saying, well, look, this property really doesn't have the kind of value you think it does, so we're not going to lend the money on it, or whatever it is, you know, if I'm getting some pushback from the lender, what that means is that they're actually protecting me from making a bad investment. And so you should see the lender as your friend and your advocate.
I agree completely. I mean, you know, it's another important piece of the puzzle that you need to have in place to be successful. And no different from my perspective. I mean, obviously I'm a lender, so I've had access to financing throughout my career to finance my projects. But, you know, I see it no different than having, you know, a good realtor, having a good mentor to help you, having a good plumber, having a good AC contractor, having a good attorney, a good CPA. Those are all pieces of the puzzle that you need in place to build your foundation and to be successful in any business. You know, obviously the trades are specific to real estate, but having the right pieces of the puzzle in place so you can be successful in all aspects, and having experts at your fingertips to call and ask advice and run scenarios by, and a lender definitely is a big part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So how can, if people are interested in contacting you or contacting your company, what would be a tip for them to do that?
Well, you can call us direct. Our Houston line is 713-802-0606. As you mentioned, we're also on the web at texaslonestar.com, and the loan is LOAN. You know, we have actually web access that you can email us direct with questions. Our email is info@texaslonestar.com. I have a 1-800 number. If you're interested in calling us, our toll-free line, it's 1-888-574-4243.
Excellent. Okay, super. So anybody out there that wants to get, you know, financing going, look at different options other than conventional loans, definitely you're a great place to go do that. And Leith, I just want to thank you for this interview. It's been, I think, a real high-powered interview, very informative, very helpful, and I think a lot of people are going to really appreciate the things that you've shared.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to be on, and looking forward to continuing to build my goals, or building my rental portfolio. I'm real active in the market, and I'm real excited about the market and the opportunities that are out there. So from an investment standpoint, I'm a big believer, and I think there's a lot of opportunity for everyone, really, to build a nice portfolio, real estate portfolio, to help with your investment strategy long term. And from a financing perspective, we're experts in real estate financing, whether it's residential or commercial. So we'd love to be, your partner in connection with your building your investment strategy.
Absolutely. Excellent. Well, very good, Leigh. Thank you again, and take care. I'll let you know when we get the interview up. It'll probably be about a week for them to transcribe it and everything, and we'll go from there. So excellent. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.